This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, girl.
You are now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge, and here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Andrew Flanagan, and Chad Campbell.
I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty.
Hello, welcome to the latest edition of the Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. I am one of your co-hosts, the cowboy, Roger Morissette, and the lounge is filled tonight, folks. We are going to do an in-depth analysis of UFC 174. We're going to look at the NBA Finals. We're going to break down the NL East in the major leagues, and we're going to close things out with the World Cup. And like I said, the lounge is full. The cigar smoke is thick. Let me introduce everyone who's here. We have my standard co-host, Andy Flanagan, the Lone Ranger, and Chaddy Oakley, C-Squared, coming to us from the Dirty South, Hot Atlanta, where the players play, Chad Campbell. We have Keith Schmidt, our MLB expert, and we have our World Cup expert and all-around great guy, Jeff Machado. How's everything going, guys?
Excellento.
Not too bad.
Excellent, excellent. So, again, we're here at the Sports Lounge, proud member of the Place to Be Nation family. We like to think of ourselves as the Thinking Man's podcast, the Thinking Man Sports podcast here on the Place to Be Nation.
And I sent it to the wrong place. I'm sorry.
You fit right in here, Jeff.
Whoops.
So, as the Thinking Man's podcast, we don't just gloss over stuff. We're going in depth. We're looking behind the numbers, as they say, and trying to come at you with the hard hitting analysis that you're not going to find anywhere else on Place to Be Nation, or like we like to think anywhere else on the web. So, without further ado, let's get things started. We're going to talk UFC 174. Chad Campbell is a resident MMA expert along with myself. So, Chad, how do you feel about tomorrow night's UFC 174? For those who don't know, we're taping this on Friday, so the UFC is tomorrow night.
Yeah, so I would say an interesting card overall. If you're an outsider looking in, maybe only purchase sporadic UFC pay-per-views, I don't think this is one you may be leaning towards. But we have a flyweight championship match on top, a really heavy contendership match. Welterweight division, second from the. Then a couple of previous high prospects and you.
So Chad, what I'll tell you, the main event in particular, Mighty Mouse Johnson versus Ali Bagatinov, is a real good stylistic clash, in my opinion. Mighty Mouse. He's getting a lot of pound for pound talk, which surprises me a little bit, given that he's, he got that knockout, and I think that is what is propelling him in these pound for pound lists. I mean, he's a great technical fighter, but for the most part, doesn't hit very hard, and pretty much has to win a 5-round decision. I think the knockout was pretty lucky. I think Bagatinov could spring the upset here. I love these Russian guys, the Sambo guys. He's a heavy hitter. He's got heavy hands. He's going to push the pace, and I think he can wear the smaller Johnson down. What do you think?
Yeah, so Bagatinov has such a small, compact frame, but like you said, he can pack a lot of punch. I agree with you that the knockout that Mighty Mouse had on Benavidez was pretty important from an overall standpoint, I think, for the division, because with Johnson on top so far, there'd been a lot of decisions that he'd been kind of eking out, winning fairly, fairly convincingly, but still kind of eking them out. Then he got a submission. Then he got the KO punch, which I was really surprised about. I actually thought Benavidez was going to take the belt that matchup. So it'll be interesting to see what he does here, where he tries to take a more technical approach and kind of use his speed to his advantage to outlast and outcondition Ollie, or if he's going to get caught with one of the power punches and go down.
On that note, Chad, I think it's suicide for Mighty Mouse to fall in love with his power and try to knock out Bagatina.
Yeah.
He will get knocked out. I don't want to say the punch against Benavidez is a lucky punch, but I think it came about due to Benavidez having just zero respect for Mighty Mouse's power, and he caught him with a perfect shot, and it happens, but... If he starts trying to knock guys out, that's not how he got to where he is, and he'll lose the fight if he fights like that.
Yeah, we see this sometimes where a lot of times it happens with wrestlers where all of a sudden they may get a knockout, or they decide now they're more of a boxers or kickboxer style. And I agree with you that if he wants to turn this into a slugfest, that is the wrong strategy to go. I think he's going to have to be in and out. I really see it more as a conditioning strategy for him to have success.
Yeah, he definitely has the best gas tank probably in the whole UFC. So, Cowboys call. You know, I'm real torn on this one. But I'm gonna go with Mighty Mouse. I'm going to go with Mighty Mouse by 5-round decision. Possibly contentious decision. I see Mighty Mouse taking the first 2 rounds pretty clearly with his speed, starting to wear down, and could be one of those kind of similar to the Hendricks-Lawler fight where he loses 3 and 4 and then pulls the rabbit out of the hat in the fifth. But I'm gonna begrudgingly take Mighty Mouse by decision. What do you think?
Yeah, I was leaning Mighty Mouse by decision as well. And I'm kind of contemplating whether I think he'll be in some danger in this fight, because I do see if he does get caught, I can see Ollie finishing him off. So I'm kind of contemplating whether I think he'll be in significant danger or not, or kind of just run his way to a decision, honestly.
Right. So it seems like we're on the same page there, and that's a good page to be on. Next up, we have Rory McDonald, Tyron Woodley, welterweight bout. And this is going to lead us into a more in-depth conversation about the division as a whole. But let's take a look at McDonald Woodley first. How do you see this one playing out, Chad? What do you think the strengths and weaknesses are, both guys?
So Woodley is a guy that I really kind of was able as, I think, the only Strikeforce fan for a lot of its run. That's what it felt like. I was a big fan of Woodley when he was doing those Strikeforce Challenger show, kind of watching him rise up the ranks. Was elated when he got the decision over Paul Daly. And his transition to the UFC has been very well. I mean, a lot of KOs and TKOs. His only loss was a split decision loss to Jake Shields, which I did have Shields winning that fight. But he's someone that really packs a lot of power, and I think this is going to be a great kind of slugfest type fight. That's where I'm sitting on this one.
All right, so let me give you my thoughts on. I agree with Woodley having great power. I actually didn't really like him too much in Strikeforce because as a wrestler, he started out being kind of a lay and pray guy and, you know, did a lot. I mean, for a guy with his athletic gifts, he won a fair number of boring decisions against inferior competition. But since he's been in the UFC, I think it's kind of a similar analogy to what you were saying earlier, Chad. He found this power. He's fallen in love with it. But I think in his case, it's a good thing because he's, you know, he's fast and he hits like a ton of bricks. So If he can catch McDonald, he can knock him out. McDonald, very, very well-rounded. I feel like this is a bad matchup for Woodley. I think Woodley's best chance is probably the lay and pray, and I don't think he can consistently take McDonald down. Woodley's gas tank has been an issue in the past, too. His best, you know, so the lay and pray could work, or if he can catch him early, if he can catch McDonald with something big early, he can win the fight. But McDonald is super well-rounded. He's a better striker, a better overall striker than Woodley. And I see him keeping Woodley on the end of his jab. He's just a better overall MMA fighter, in my opinion. And winner of this fight, could very well be fighting for the title in their next fight, which we're going to get to. But Cowboys call in this one. I'm going to go McDonald. I'm going to go McDonald by third round KO, probably as a result as much of Woodley being gassed as it is more of an accumulation of punishment TKO as opposed to a one punch knockout. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, so I'm gonna stick with my boy Woodley, and I think McDonald is probably I see him taking him down fairly early on in the first round, but I see Woodley being able to get back up to a standing position and catching him with a punch and winning by first round TKO.
All right, that's the kind of ballsy call you get here on the Sports Lounge from Dirty South Chad Campbell. That's fantastic. So let's take a look deeper into the welterweight division, if you don't mind, Chad.
Okay.
So as I said, the winner of this fight is most likely going to fight for the title. Well, how's that going to happen? The welterweight division, I think, is with the lightweight division, the two most stacked divisions in the UFC. And we just had when George St. Pierre relinquished the title, I think it was actually good for the division in that he had reigned for so long that, you know, it was getting a little boring. He probably lost that fight to Hendricks anyway. And so for him to step away really opened the door for some new blood. And the Hendricks-Lawler fight to crown the champion, which has been the fight of the year so far, in my opinion. What a great, great scrap. So we have Robbie Lawler fighting Matt Brown. Matt Brown's probably the most fun guy to watch in the whole UFC, by the way. He is just, if you didn't see his fight with Eric Silva, it was just freaking awesome. But they're fighting with the winner of that fight taking on Hendricks for the title. And then this fight coming up tomorrow night between Woodley and McDonald's, a de facto number one contender bout for the winner of that. So how do you see this playing out? What do you think the division as a whole, Chad? Do you have any sleepers that you like? Yeah, just what are your thoughts?
So this is an interesting division because honestly, if we were doing this preview of the division this time last year, it's possible I would say it's my least interesting division in all of UFC. And all of a sudden now, with the kind of maybe not necessarily resurrection of Robbie Lawler's career, but I don't think it's unfair to say that when he signed on with UFC, there wasn't a ton of expectations for him left. He seemed like he was pretty gassed and out of it with his strike force stuff. And then I would say the resurrection of Matt Brown, who is just on this incredible entertaining and win streak, which came really out of nowhere. Absolutely incredible. Probably the most exciting guy to watch, I'd say, right now. Him versus Robbie Lawler has all signs to be like fight of the year contender, at least. That's definitely a fight you want to mark down. I'm glad they're putting it on the TV show. I think that was a very smart move. So you keep thinking that Matt Brown's luck might necessarily run out, and this certainly, I do think, is a step up in competition for him facing Lawler. So I do see Lawler probably winning that fight if I had to give an early prediction. But then, like you said, I mean, I think the McDonald-Woodley fight's going to be very exciting. You have Carlos Condit still kind of hanging around down there. And then even like Ellenberger, Damian Maya, these type of guys probably aren't necessarily going to be title contenders anytime soon. But I do think they're very solid gatekeepers when you're looking down at the bottom 10 of your rankings that you can kind of see guys elevate up to get into contender status.
Yeah, absolutely. And a guy you didn't mention, Chad, who's on a nice run since he dropped down to welterweight, is Hector Lombard. I'm sure you being a fan of Bellator and of Strikeforce, I'm sure know of Lombard. And he came to the UFC with a lot of fanfare and frankly looked like shit when he started. But since he dropped down, I mean, he knocked out Nate Marquardt, dominated Jake Shields, and he's fighting under they're not doing him any favors putting him in with Dong-Yun Kim, who's just a tough, tough guy to fight. But if he can get by Kim, Lombard's the kind of guy he's got the explosiveness similar to Woodley in a lot of ways that he can beat anybody on a given night. And I mean, I think he's a handful. He is a horse, big guy for this division.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking when he was dropping down. I didn't think he'd be able to do it. I did not think he'd be able to cut the club. And you look at him, it when he's in the odd, kind of reminds me of like Thiago Alves from a few years ago, where he would be coming into the cage, you know, like 200 pounds or something after he cut weight down to 170. So it's pretty incredible to watch him come in, and he does. He looks huge. He definitely looks bigger than anybody in division. And then you still got to think, I mean, I still don't really know what's the deal with GSP, but, you know, I would be very surprised if we've seen his last fight.
He'll be back. I mean, my personal opinion is he might. I think he's going to come back and fight Anderson Silva in a super fight that's a little over marinated, but give both these guys just a huge payday for their stellar careers. So, Chad, January 1st, 2015, who's your welterweight champion?
So I guess we'll kind of say then we'll use the crux that by that time, whoever wins the Lawler-Brown fight and whoever wins tomorrow night's fight will both have championship matches.
That's the thought, yes.
And I actually think I'm going to stick to my guns and say it's going to be Johnny Hendricks still. I think he's really been able to kind of – a guy that's just – overall evolved as a fighter, and it's been a treat to see with his wrestling, with his striking. He's not afraid to mix it up, to change styles. I think he's very versatile. So I think Hendricks will still be your UFC welterweight champion on January 1st.
As a fight fan, the fight I think that makes the best fight in the whole division is if Woodley can somehow come through this and fight Hendricks, two just great wrestlers who aren't going to be able to take each other down, who just have dynamite in their hands. I think it would just be awesome for however long it lasted. I don't think that's going to happen, though. And I think Rory McDonald puts it together, and I think Rory McDonald makes it through this de facto tournament and is your champion January 1, 2015. I just think he's the most well-rounded of the bunch. He's the youngest of the bunch. I think that the loss to Lawler, I think, was helpful for him, humbled him, and I think he's come back pretty much stronger than ever. And he reminds me so much of GSP that, I mean, they train together too, obviously.
Right.
But I think he ends out your champion. I think he's takes the torch from GSP and ends out being your champion for a long time. But thanks so much, Chad. That was a great, great MMA talk there. Great analysis. Can't wait for the fight card tomorrow night. Everybody, tune in. If you don't tune in, we'll be talking about it for sure on the next Sports Lounge. But we're going to take a break here and take a listen to some of the other great podcasts on Place to Be Nation and some of the other things we have to offer. And we'll be back with some NBA Finals talk.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Living on you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
I can't wait till I get you on the good looking. Hey, going hot so hot, just like you love it. And I'll burn myself, I just had to touch it. But it's so fine, and it's so nice.
Welcome back to the Sports Lounge for the NBA Finals. So, again, we're recording this on a Friday night, and last night, the San Antonio Spurs surprisingly won by 21 points in Miami to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the finals, and we here at the Sports Lounge are going to break it down for you. We have Andy, the Lone Ranger Flanagan. How's it going, Andy?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Good, good. So,
how'd you get that nickname?
It's a great nickname. You like it, Jeff?
I do. I just don't know how he got it.
I believe it was a waitress.
Yeah, you weren't even there. I just remembered that. Yeah, it's not a great story. A waitress said, oh, here comes the Lone Ranger, because I was the last one to show up.
That's actually a great story.
Actually, yeah, it came out a lot better than I remember it.
So the way I heard it, Jeff, was the waitress really, really liked his look and was just trying to strike up a conversation with this strapping gentleman. And she said, hey, if I call him the Lone Ranger, maybe he'll ask for...
What more masculine image is there than the Lone Ranger?
Marble, right. Man.
Exactly. So as you can hear, we have Jeff Machado on as well. He's our color guy for the NBA, our soccer expert, color guy for the NBA. And we have Keith Schmidt, our MLB expert, who I was going to weigh in here as well. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. Excellent. I got a cramp, though. I don't know if I can continue.
sounds like a certain... best basketball on the player on the planet to me. So start things off
with
Andy.
You're the best host on the planet.
Andy Flanagan, what do you think? I mean, this is crazy what's going on. Not totally unexpected, but, you know, given what happened last year,
it's pretty unexpected to see anybody playing that well or playing offense that well in the finals.
Absolutely.
Against, like, you know, what has been over the season a very good defense, but they just look like, you know, they look like the JV team playing against the varsity right now.
So absolutely, Andy. And you know, there's kind of two schools of thought out there on this one. You have the San Antonio is just that good crowd, right? And then you have the Heat, other than LeBron James, are old and tired and are just not the team that they used to be. So where do you fall? Do you think it might be a mix of the two? Where are you at on that?
Yeah, it's definitely a combination. No, you know, I can't remember the last time I've seen any team as hot on offense as, or, you know, not just hot, but like executing so perfectly as the Spurs are right now. And I think that contributes to making the Heat look old, but you also have to take into account that this is their fourth straight finals at this point. They've just played so many games over the last couple of years. I can understand why they look tired, but it's pretty not a great showing at this point.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the underrated things that it's talked about, but it's not talked about as much as some other things is, I'm not sure you guys are aware of this, but San Antonio doesn't have one guy on the team that averaged playing 30 minutes a game this year. And the Heat, while they're, you know, they've won two titles, and the Heat arguably have the three best players in the series. You know, if you were going to start a team from scratch, you're probably starting with James, Wade, and Bosch, right? And with those three best players on their team, those guys have logged so many minutes, and Popovich is just such a master of keeping his guys fresh that
I think that the Heat have this on-off switch that they've been able to, you know, that's how they've kind of maintained that they lose, but then they can just turn it on and kind of out-athletic you. Well, the Spurs are so fresh, and the Heat are just a little bit tired, and they're just a step slow, and the ball movement's incredible. And, I mean, I think it's more of the Spurs have just played the perfect series, and they're coached by the perfect guy to beat this team. What do you guys think?
Well, the Spurs play as a complete team. The Heat don't. The Heat give the ball to LeBron, and okay, here, make something happen.
Right.
Spurs, there's no ego. Whoever's shooting well, shoots.
Absolutely. A lot of isolation plays. And I mean, I think LeBron would prefer to distribute more, but I think that his supporting cast has really not stepped up. And I mean,
well, weren't people just calling him out a couple of games ago for passing the ball too much?
Yes.
Damned if he does, damned if he
doesn't. Yeah, exactly.
He's the best player in the world. He is a great, great, great player. You know, I don't like the way he handled the decision. I think he's a bit of a prima donna. But as far as a basketball talent, I mean, you're taking a guy with Chris Paul's skills and putting him in Blake Griffin's body. Basically, it's ridiculous. What are your thoughts, Jeff, on the way the series has played out?
Well, let me ask you guys this. Are you saying that there's no chance that the Heat come back and win the series?
Well, there's a chance.
I'd be really, really surprised.
I'd put it like 5% if I had to give a percentage.
5%?
5%.
I think it's higher than
5%. What is that in odds, Jeff?
What's that?
I said, what is that in odds? 20 to 1?
Yeah, that's 20 to 1. That's University of Chicago education right there. No, I think it's a lot higher. And I've seen finals like this before. There have always been blowouts in the finals. It happened with the Lakers and the Celtics in the 80s. One team would blow out the other by 30, and one team would go up 3 to 1, and it would go 7 games. I mean, yeah, San Antonio, they shot, what, 80% in the first half of game 3? It just doesn't happen anymore. Like, it's impossible. Even Popovich said in the press conference, he's like, you will never see that happen ever again. And it was kind of surprising that they came out and got blown away again yesterday, but what if LeBron really was sick? What if he's one of these guys that only plays the best when his back's against the wall? I think, all right, so they come out, they win game 5, win game 6, and who's the favorite in game 7? What were we saying last year in game 6 when San Antonio was up by, what, 15 points with 3 minutes left? It was all over, you know, how could they come out and play like this?
So Jeff, I think those are valid points, and I think if the Heat do this, it's the greatest comeback in NBA Finals history, and LeBron James puts himself up there with Michael Jordan, and so they have the opportunity to do that. I think the thing that makes it so difficult and such a big hill to climb is the fact that they just got blown out twice in a row at home, and to win this series, they're going to have to go to San Antonio twice and win. Historically, teams go down 3-1, and they're going on the road. They lose game 5. So that's enough of a hill to climb right there. I think they're in big trouble in game 5. If they get through game 5, of course they can win game 6 in Miami. But then again, historically, game 7s, the home teams have such a high, you know, high level of winning. They almost always win.
Are you looking at a number for that, or are you just guessing?
I'm not. I mean, I don't have the number in front of me.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's true or not. I can't remember.
Yes, I believe across all sports, the home team wins. It's something like 67% of the time, something like that. Game sevens, we can look at those numbers at another time.
But don't get me wrong. As a betting man, I'm betting on the Spurs to win the series. But my thing with as far as LeBron and his legacy with the Heat goes, I think his biggest problem is that he's going up against Jordan. Everyone wants to make him the best player of all time. And in the 90s, there's never been a situation like that before. And now he's getting flack for going to Wade and trying to bring Carmelo Anthony in if Wade leaves. But Jordan had Scottie Pippen. That wasn't like, you know, a bad – that was like two of the top 10 players in the NBA playing together, and Jordan got all the credit because he was the best player ever. But look at Kobe. Kobe is one of the top 10 best players ever, and he lost the finals. So if LeBron were to lose this finals, and he lost one with Cleveland, he lost one against the Spurs, but if he were to lose this finals, it doesn't mean he can't come back and still get him his himself into that top 10 conversation again.
Oh, I think he's in. I think no matter what, he could retire tomorrow and be top 10.
In other words, I'm saying if they do lose game 5 or game 6, it's more about the Spurs being a great team. Because even if you go back to Jordan, like, who was Jordan playing in the finals?
I was just trying to remember that. What was the best team he faced? Phoenix?
Probably Phoenix in 93 or the Lakers in the first one.
The Jazz teams were really...
But the Jazz up against the Spurs right now. Who's going to win that series?
Right, I definitely think the Spurs.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But the, I mean, so we actually looked up the numbers here, Keith and I. There have been 119 Game 7s in NBA history. 24 of them have been won by the road team.
All right, so that's not very good.
So the Heat have a tough mountain to climb here. I don't think it takes away from LeBron's legacy. I think they're just up against, at this point, just a better team. I think Popovich is just coaching circles around Spoelstra. And I think Spoelstra's a good coach. And, you know, pardon my Patriot reference, but I think Popovich is very much like a Bill Belichick of the NBA in that his system is just better than everybody else's. And, I mean, they can win with somewhat inferior talent. I mean, Tim Duncan's older than dirt. Ginobili has looked awful two seasons in a row, and it's like he's just been saving himself for these playoffs. And a guy like Kawhi Leonard, if he ends out on the Charlotte Bobcats, you know, is he right? And now he's really been, and I'd like to talk about him too. Kawhi Leonard stepping it up, starting in game 3. He's played LeBron head up. I mean, he's really the one guy in this series who's taken kind of the leap from good player to top 20 guy in the NBA. What do you guys think of Kawhi?
I mean, I would say he's if the Spurs do win out and win the series, he's probably, I would think, in line to possibly be your MVP for the finals. And somebody that took a big step up, and I think his shooting has greatly improved, which was surprising. I didn't think he was that good of a shooter when he was at San Diego State, but now, I mean, he's knocking down long range jumpers and looking pretty good at doing it.
Yeah, his jumper looks really smooth. It looks kind of like Kobe. You get that straight, squared up shot. It's beautiful. He's playing great this series. Actually, last year's finals he played great, and everyone thought he would have a breakout season. He kind of had like a slower regular season, but he really looks good. And if he were on the Charlotte Bobcats, I bet he would give them at least plus 10 wins.
Wow.
I think he's that kind of player. I mean, the guy's he's not like a young punk guy. He's dedicated. He's worked with the system.
Yeah.
And obviously Popovich is a good guy to get him into that
role.
But
I think the point is, if you don't have the system for him to buy into, like, what does he become? Like,
then I think he would become a Carmelo Anthony type guy who scored 30 points a game. And
yeah, right. Like Michael Carter Williams is.
So, my thought is that Popovich developed this guy, right? And that.
Well, I'm pretty sure I've heard, like, in stories about that draft that, as you say, his shot wasn't that great at the time, but they saw something in it that they could fix.
So the points he scored in game 3, I believe it was 27 points, was a career high for him, both college and pro. So the Spurs saw something there. They actually traded George Hill, who was a great Spur, who is not particularly good now as a Pacer. It was basically a straight up trade, George Hill for Kawhi Leonard, and the way Popovich has developed this guy, I think, is just absolutely incredible. The way he's developed Patty Mills. Patty Mills is like an assassin off the bench, and this guy is barely in the NBA.
He's made Boris Diaw awesome again.
I lived in Phoenix for a period of time. I have a great story about hanging out with Boris Diaw at this club called Barcelona. Really, really nice guy. Very French, but very, 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 very nice guy. I saw him coming out of the bathroom, and me and my friends had like 10 too many at the time. And I was like, Boris, come here. And he was very gracious. So I always root for Boris. But, I mean, Boris looks like he's pretty much just lived at McDonald's for the last 5 years. And for what Bob Popovich just uses him so perfectly, you know, he's a great. He might be the best passing big man in the whole NBA, and he just uses that so well, and it's so it's really incredible to watch a well-oiled machine like that and to see the basketball the way it should be played and how the sum of the parts can just be so much better than all the individuals. With that said, if you know, since we're going in depth here, for the Heat to come back, what do you think the one or two things that they need to fix, and they need to fix now? We'll start with Andy.
It can't just be Tim Duncan has to get hurt or something like that. They have to fix something.
No, I don't think that would. I don't even think that would matter.
Well, I mean, it would help if they got a better game from Wade than they got last night, because he looked kind of washed up in that game.
Agreed. How about you, Chad? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Wade's definitely the GOAT today after last night's performance, but, I mean, he looked awful. I mean, he looked slow. He looked like he couldn't get any lift on his shot. He wasn't getting any of his calls that he usually does. So he looked really bad.
Jeff, Keith, you guys got any thoughts on what the Heat have to do to come back? I know, Jeff, you think they can do it. What do you think they're going to change to make things a little more even?
Well, obviously, I mean, they're not playing that bad on offense. They're shooting pretty well. So they're going to need, you know, more. Obviously, Wade has sucked the last couple games, and Bosch needs to have a big game. But they're going to have to figure out some sort of defensive plan. Like, I don't know, shut down Parker and Dio and Duncan together is just almost impossible to guard because they can both pass, they can both shoot. I don't know. You guys, they're probably just going to win game 5 by 30.
we've turned them.
Leave LeBron alone!
Keith, any thoughts, Keith?
Feed the ball to Ray Allen. Watch him shoot threes. Outscore him.
All right. So here, the Cowboys' thought is that for the Heat, it really starts at the point guard position. Chalmers and Cole have just been awful. Like, I mean, if you look at their PERs in the playoffs, just like historically awful.
Chalmers should just be sat.
Yeah, I mean, we play basketball. A few of the guys who are on the podcast right now, we get together and play basketball. And there's no doubt in my mind that Jeff or I could go out there and do what Chalmers and Cole have done in the finals so far.
Chalmers should not have arms to shoot the basketball in the first place.
Those guys need to at least play like reasonable NBA point guard. Just if they could step it up to below average, the Heat it's a huge shot in the arm for the Heat. So I think it starts there. I don't think Wade's washed up. I think he just had a bad game and got frustrated. I think he's capable of being okay. And I think it's important that LeBron doesn't try to take over. The Spurs are too good. They're too good and too well coached to get beat by one guy. It's just not going to happen. So I think they actually – one of their advantages is Bosch being quicker than Tim Duncan. And, they had a lot of success feeding Bosch on the elbow and letting him work one-on-one with Duncan and kind of pull Duncan away from the hoop. And they really got away from that in Game 3 and Game 4. And Bosch is not known as being assertive, but I think – you know, he needs to call for the ball, and he needs to say, "I'm one of the few plus matchups that we have out here," and he needs to really step it up. I think if they could do those three things, so better point guard play, Wade not looking like he's 100 years old, and Bosch getting about three times the touches as he's gotten the last couple of games. I think if they can do those three things, they have a chance. If they can't do those three things, they're cooked. And they have to hope that San Antonio cools off a little bit. I mean, when they cool off and they still shoot 57% yesterday, it's, 57%, it's really, really tough to beat a team who shoots 57%.
Jesus Shuttlesworth can do it.
Right, he can. So, great, great finals talk, guys. So, let's get everybody's predictions before we head to break. I'm gonna say Spurs in 5. I think they beat them. I think they clean their clock in Game 5 and call it a night. What do you think, Andy?
I'm gonna hope that the Heat have more pride than that and say Spurs in 6.
All right, Andy thinks they're gonna close it out in Miami.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Wow, that's just even worse. That's like a worse kick in the nuts for those fans, isn't it?
those long suffering Miami fans that we're all so proud of.
Chad Campbell, what do you think?
Spurs in five. I think it's over.
Jeffrey Machado, what do you think?
Heat win in seven. LeBron scores 50. And
better than Jordan.
Another 50 for Ray Allen in game seven.
Mark, here we go.
There it is. Jeff's putting his money where his mouth is. I like that. I like this. It's got some balls. It's good. And then Keith, you'll close us out. What's your prediction?
Ray Allen shows up game five and six.
Yep.
Spurs win in seven.
Spurs win in seven. All right. So we have a few different predictions here. It's going to be real interesting to see what happens. And we will definitely be breaking it down however it goes on the next Sports Lounge. So we're going to head to another break. And when we come back, we're going to break down the NL East for you. So stick around, everyone.
Go better get Bron Bron. Got that Bob Barker suit game and Plinko in my style. Money, stay on my craft and stick around for those pounds. But I do that to pass the torch and put on for my town. Trust me, on my I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T shit hustling. Chasing dreams since I was 14.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, well, be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
You ready, Mace?
Party people!
Uh-huh.
It's about that time
for us to. Yeah. What you know about going out? Head west, red legs, TVs, all up in the headrest. Try and live it up, ride jewel, bigger truck, peach all glittered up, stick a kid, nigga, what? Jig with a cut, sip crisp, spit it up, hoes ride.
Welcome back to the Sports Lounge, folks. Hope you enjoyed the break and hope you enjoyed that that excellent NBA talk that we had with the fiery Jeff Machado, really adding some spice to the mix. We love this guy and hope that he sticks around on the Sports Lounge. There's room on the couch for him, and we got a cigar ready for him. So now we're gonna talk some baseball as we do every week. This is a weekly feature on the Sports Lounge. Last week we discussed the AL East, and we're gonna move to the NL East now. We have our resident baseball expert Keith Schmidt on the line with us here. How you doing, Keith?
I'm doing fantastic. Just got off the phone with Gammons and I'm ready to go.
All right. I don't know if that's true.
No,
so,
it's not.
Don't get mad at us, Peter. I know you're listening. So. So getting in, Andy Flanagan's also going to join us here on the NL East talk, and we could possibly hear from Master Machado again. So this is great, great show tonight. So NL East, first thing that jumps out to me, guys, is you have three teams. You have the Nationals, the Braves, and the upstart, surprising, Miami Marlins, all within one game of first place as we speak here. Washington's ahead by one game, but this is a tight race. So, Keith, what are your thoughts on those three teams, kind of in general? Where you know how they've started? What can you give us?
Oh, I'm shocked about all three teams, to be honest with you. Washington, they should be seven games ahead in this division with the team that they have. a couple of injuries, a very rough start, and they're still in first place, but Atlanta's right on their tail. Atlanta, this team lost arguably their two best starting pitchers to Tommy John before the season started, yeah. And they're still hanging around. Miami is the biggest surprise. If you know five players on the Miami Marlins, raise your hand. You know,
absolutely. But it's a young team. They yeah, the Marlins gutted their team. Gutted their team, except for Giancarlo Stanton, brought up a bunch of kids and guys like Yelich and Ozuna. I mean, they're really coming through. I mean, they're one of my favorite teams to watch because of those young guys. How about you, Andy? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm really surprised about Miami. Even now, I'm not sure how they're staying above 500, especially with Fernandez out for the year. But that offense is pretty impressive. So I guess that's the answer to how they're doing it.
I mean, that's a great point, Andy. I mean, still one game out of first with, you know, that team who literally has two stars on the team, Giancarlo Stanton and Fernandez. And Fernandez, for my money, Fernandez is the best pitcher in the National League, maybe the major leagues. And to lose him, must see
Jose Fernandez. It reminds me of Pedro Martinez. When he pitched, you watched the game.
I mean, not to go off on a tangent here, guys, but how bad does it suck that in back-to-back years we lose Matt Harvey, Tommy John surgery, Jose Fernandez, Tommy John surgery, both teams in this division, the two best young arms I've seen in it harkens back to the days of like Dwight Gooden coming up and just dominating the league.
Yeah,
and then
Roger Clemens.
Do you guys think these guys are going to come back at full strength? How do you think their teams are going to handle them? Do you think they're going to be overly cautious? Do you think they're going to bring them back quick?
Matt Harvey, if it was up to him, he'd be pitching this season. But I think the Mets, you know, by the time he's ready to pitch, they'll probably be 20 games out. So I don't think you'll see him maybe for a start or two in September. But next year, he should be back full strength. And if history says anything, when you come back from Tommy John, you come back stronger. Yeah. They rebuild your entire elbow, and it's actually stronger if you do the rehab process correctly. So we'll see with Harvey. Jose Fernandez, mid-season next year, I would say.
Yeah. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, it's about what I was going to say, that Tommy John's a pretty well-understood surgery at this point, and they know how to rehab it, and most guys are pretty successful coming back. But the Mets certainly don't have any reason to rush Harvey back. They're not, you know, booking World Series tickets next year.
They're terrible.
Miami's probably in the same position next year.
You know, it's too bad with the Mets too, because they do have some talent in their pitching staff, young pitchers.
Yeah,
but when you make Curtis Granderson your prize free agent pickup, you should be fired on the spot. I'm sorry, Sandy Alderson. Really?
No love for the Grandy man.
the park they play in doesn't do him any favors.
No, but
hitters.
I mean, he's a good player, but he's a role player. You know, he makes your team better, but he can't be your cleanup hitter. You just can't be that guy.
Maybe 5 years ago he could be, but he's kind of on the – I think he's a bit on the tail end. I think you're seeing it with Wright, too, that he's not the guy he used to be. And, you know, that team has just been – I mean, they're kind of like the – you guys have heard my thoughts on the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're very, very much like the Jacksonville Jaguars of the major leagues. Big – except they're in a big market, so they just have no excuse. I mean, year after year, the product is just putrid. What do you think, Andy?
Sorry about that. I was muted for a second. What was the question?
The Mets. I mean, I compared them to the Jaguars. I said they're a big market team. Or the Clippers, you know, before this year. They're just big market team that just, you know, can't.
Yeah, and they have the disadvantage of having the Yankees in the same city, making them look even worse by comparison. Yes, and they have a tough ownership situation right now where, you know, it's the Wilpons, right? I was afraid I was going to say the wrong name for a second.
Correct.
Are having their financial troubles, but apparently have no interest in selling the team to someone who can actually, you know, field a competitive baseball team. So, yeah, I feel some sympathy for Mets fans.
They do spend money, though.
It's true.
Their payroll is pretty high. They just spend it on the wrong people. But they do have some decent young pitching. You know, Dylan G, Harvey when he comes back. Zach Wheeler. They got, what's his name, Syndergaard? Noah yep. Syndergaard from Toronto. So, you know, the future could be bright, but, you know, you got to get rid of the guy upstairs making the decisions.
Cause yeah, he needs some faith in the front office, right?
And, I mean, that's a great point, Keith, because if Wheeler's coming up was the better, bigger prospect, considerably bigger prospect than Harvey. He hasn't panned out like Harvey, but if you watch him pitch, he's got all the raw tools. Yeah. If he can put it together in a couple of years, you have those two guys at the top of your rotation. Yeah. You could start thinking about something. It's just going to be so difficult for their fans, you know, to just year after year to be out of it with the month and a half left in the season.
Yeah,
but let's talk a little more about the top of the division. I thought Keith made a great point at the beginning here with the Nationals, and I absolutely agree with Keith that roster wise the Nationals are the class of this division. You know, talk about guys coming back from Tommy John surgery and coming back strong. Strasburg certainly fits that mold. He started off a little rocky this year, but if you look when you're looking behind the numbers, it is a fielding independent pitching. I mean, his FIP was a point and a half or something lower than his ERA after his first 10 starts. He's a top five pitcher in the major leagues. And
especially
that,
in the last month.
And so what do you think Keith's been holding them back? Do you think it's the staff, the hitting, just things not coming together? What's your take on the Nationals?
A little bit of bad luck and some injuries, but when they were hitting well at the beginning of the year, they weren't pitching, and vice versa. But they've seemed to have put it back together in the last month. Gio Gonzalez will be back next week, I believe. And Ryan Zimmerman is back now.
How long's Ryan Zimmerman back for?
Well, he's in left field. I don't know if that's good or bad for them. But their lineup is – that's got to be the best National League lineup in the league, for sure.
They're loaded.
They are loaded. I mean, with Zimmerman back – when Bryce Harper comes back, Zimmerman is – odd man out.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team that can legitimately bat Bryce Harper in the two hole, and it doesn't look weird.
Right.
So, I mean, Worth. I'm a big fan of Worth. I think he's pretty underrated. And yeah. You mentioned Gio Gonzalez, who I think is kind of criminally underrated in the majors. I mean, he's an ace. He's an absolute ace. He's the number two on that team,
right.
or even possibly the three with Zimmerman.
They have three aces: Jordan Zimmerman, Strasburg, and Gio. You know, and the other two guys, Pfister and Rourke, they're pretty good too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's real good. That's why I say they should be, you know, close to 10 games up on the Braves.
And there's a chance there that cream rises to the top, but there's something about these freaking Braves. Every year, no matter how bad their roster, they're like the anti-Mets. No matter how bad their roster looks, they can. They're always in contention. They win the division a lot. And this year, in particular, as you said, they lose Beachy, right? They lose Beachy. They lose Medlin, both to Tommy John surgery before the season starts. And their rotation is so good right now that Alex Wood, who was pitching great at the beginning of the season, he's not even in the top five. He's in the minor leagues.
They
sent him to the minor leagues. So, I mean, that's a starting rotation that goes eight guys deep. Teron had a little bit of a rough go of it at Coors Field, like a lot of guys do, but he has made the step up from prospect to ace.
Yes.
He is a beast, and he's done exactly what the Mets wanted Zach Wheeler to do, but he hasn't. Aaron Harangutang, I think, is going to come back down to earth.
Yeah, he's going to come back to earth.
He's the Burley of the National League. And I think he's just, you know, I think he's pitched way above his head. But it's the Braves just do have a way of just making these guys better. Mike Minor was on the shelf at the beginning of the year, but he's a solid, real solid starter. Gavin Floyd, a lot of people shit on Gavin Floyd, but when he's on, he is as good as anybody. He reminds me a lot of Cologne in that way, in that he's kind of trick or treat, but he'll go through two month stretches where his ERA is 1.5.
Yeah. His ERA is under 3 right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Irvin Santana is another guy, perfect guy for the Braves. A lot of physical gifts. Has had some mental issues before. You know, sometimes has trouble putting it together. But the work they do with pitchers, I mean, he's going to be great for them. So Andy, what do you think about the Braves? You think they can stay up at the top here with smoke and mirrors, or do you think it's all going to come crashing down?
Yeah, I think you just said it. I think it's Well, I think it's mostly smoke and mirrors. I think the Nationals have a better roster top to bottom, and that stuff usually wins out in the end. So, you know, they're close enough to be within a game right now, but I think by the end of the season we'll see that the Nationals are going to prove themselves to be better, and that'll be, we'll see that in the standings.
Absolutely. And what's your take on the Braves, Keith?
Well, I think they need to, their lineup needs to start hitting continuously. You know, you go through a period of time where Freddie Freeman is hot as a pistol, and then Haywood will get hot for a couple games, and Gattis will, and Upton will. But when one does well, the others slump. They got a whole bunch of guys who are basically the same guy. They're 250, 260 hitters with power. But when those guys slump, you don't score any runs.
Right.
You know, maybe they may need to mix this roster up and you know, get a consistent 300 hitter. You know, Freddie Freeman, I think his average is under 300 right now.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he is a 300 hitter. And Simmons, I think, has at least the ability to be a 300 hitter. He's not there yet.
He's not there yet. But Chris Johnson is too as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a decent hitter. Power, but when you're sprinkling that around your lineup and you got four or five guys that constantly go 0 for 4 with three strikeouts,
yeah,
it's not going to work.
Yeah. In particular, I think this team, they could be the class of this division, but they spent money really, really stupidly the last couple of years. Two guys in particular really stand out. B.J. Upton, he's been a little bit – I mean, he was historically bad last year. I mean, but probably maybe the worst everyday player in the major leagues. You know, I mean, just offensively. I mean, he hit under – that was – he was given such a long leash because of all the fucking money they gave him, you know, but hit under 200 with not any power. I mean, to just strike out, like, every – you know, so much. Yeah. So B.J. Upton and then Ugla, they gave a shitload of money to.
Yeah, they did.
And Bull – I mean, you can't – that you can't have $150 million or whatever it is tied up in two guys who are struggling to keep it over the Mendoza line when you got them for their bats. I mean, Upton plays a pretty good outfield, but Ugla is a disaster in the field. He should be a DH. He was in the American League.
Platoon DH.
But yeah. I'm inclined to agree with you guys that the Nationals will take things and will rise to the top, but I really think the Braves can keep it close. I think history. I'm a guy who believes in history a little bit, and the Nationals have a bit of a history of choking, whereas the Braves have a history of being a real thorn in their side. And
the thing with it is, they choke when it comes to the Braves. They cannot beat the Braves.
Right.
The Braves own the Nationals. They own them.
So when you're in a division race, In September, you don't want to be playing the team that owns you in that when you're in that race with them.
I think they have I think they play each other next week, so that should get interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think the Marlins. I don't see how the hell they can stay up at the top of the standings. It's been a great run, and it's, you know, it kind of reminds me, you know, Houston to a different extent isn't as bad as people thought, but the Marlins have like actually been good.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just, you got to think that it can't sustain their home records, 22-11. Can they really keep that up? And I mean, what do you think, Andy? You think they can keep it up, or you think they're going to fall back to the pack?
Yeah, I think they're really more of a 500 team. I think they're going to end up falling back and finish around there, like, I don't know, maybe 84 wins, something like that.
And honestly, I mean, for that roster, 84 wins is like,
that's a victory.
It's like, yeah, the Nationals absolutely winning 110 games. It's the equivalent, because the Marlins aren't built to win this year. I mean, I think they're doing things right and shedding payroll, and I think Stanton, the guy they decided to keep, is the right guy to keep. I mean,
he's a
great power hitter. But
another home run tonight.
Yeah, for them to go 500, Andy, if they go 500, I mean, that's a huge,
that's a victory. Absolutely.
You got to look at them as a big time players going into next year. We haven't talked about the Phillies. Probably good reason for that. So
it's an even sadder situation than the Mets, right? They don't even have the young players coming up to get excited about.
No, they don't. They have one guy. His name's Mikel Franco, third baseman with power, but I don't know when you're going to see him. Definitely after the Super 2 deadline ends. That's for sure. But yeah, they've been a little struck by the injury bug too. Cole Hamels started the year on the DL.
Yeah.
And then when he came back, Cliff Lee went down. That is as good of a 1-2 punch as there is.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we'll see what happens when both of those guys are in the rotation, if they stay on the team, if they don't trade them.
Right.
But they're getting long in the tooth. Most of their superstars are over 30, and it might be time to blow that team up.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing with them is I respect them for taking their shot. They went out and they spent a bunch of money 3 years ago trying to win now, right? They gave Howard a bunch of money. They brought in Cliff Lee for big dollars. Papelbon for big dollars.
Roy Halladay,
another
sad case. I think that's what really killed them, because they didn't envision his arm falling off overnight. Which it did. I mean, they had legit three aces. You did not want to play that team in a playoff series.
Now, Ryan Howard's had trouble staying healthy, and he's a big time shell of what he used to be. Dominic Brown looked like a good young player, but everything you saw last year with him is, I think, there's some stat. His home runs were like the lowest actual distance of like anyone of the last 50 years. Like he was like literally have like the luckiest season in like the history of baseball, and he's come back down to earth in a big way. And if you watch him play, he is like, he makes Manny Ramirez look like a gold glove left fielder. I mean, he is just a friggin' disaster out there. Marlon Byrd, who was widely criticized when they gave him pretty decent money in free agency after having just like one good season at age 36 or so, he's actually been pretty good for him.
Yep.
He's pretty good for them. And they're only 6.5 game back. So to Keith's point, I think the Mets are also 6.5 games back. But if you were going to tell me one of those two teams is going to make a move, I think it's the Phillies.
It would be the Phillies.
Because, you know, Lee gets healthy. Hamels is healthy. Howard turns it up a little bit. You can at least envision it. The Mets, I don't see any way. I mean, I think they've frankly played over their head at 29 and 37.
Yes, they have.
As sad as that is. What do you think about the Phils, Andy?
I think they're right there with the Mets. I don't think they have any more chance of coming back than the Mets do, personally. And I think they're in a worse situation, like I said, because their roster's old and they don't have a lot of youth coming up. So
I do agree.
I apologize to any Phillies fans who might hear that.
I do agree. My wife's a big Phillies fan, Andy, and so she'll be...
I apologize to your lovely wife, then.
She'll be kicking you in the nuts the next time she sees you. That's all right. But
they do have the ability to turn it around real quick with all those trade chips, though. Because they have a lot of players on that roster that other teams will be salivating for.
That's true.
Absolutely. I mean, and any team adding Cliff Lee at the deadline, he seems to be the guy that gets added at the deadline all the time, right? I mean,
yeah, right.
Any team adding him at the deadline is adding an ace. And, I mean, even though he makes ungodly amounts of money, teams are willing to pay that for a chance to win now.
Well, he's one of the best pitchers in the league.
Oh, absolutely.
When he's on, I mean, you know, a lefty throws damn near complete games almost every time he takes the ball.
Yeah.
You know, he's a hell of a pitcher.
He's David Price in the National League with you know, that doesn't ever walk anybody and just, you know, it's a great, great bulldog
here
guy
it is,
you want out
to hit
there.
It.
Yeah.
He's another guy who could get traded this deadline, right?
Who was that?
You'd mentioned Price. I was just thinking that he could also end up being
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we spoke about that a bit during the AL East preview, which Sports Lounge listeners, if you haven't listened to that, it is fantastic. I suggest going back and listening. A lot of Keith Schmidt there, and it's great. So, Andy, you weren't on that one, but what we do at the end of the baseball segment is we predict an order of finish for this division. So, I'll go first, and I'm gonna backtrack. I did this last time. So I'm gonna backtrack. I talked myself into the Braves. I'm gonna say the Braves eking it out at the end again. Braves, Nationals, Phillies, Marlins, Mets. What do you think, Keith?
I'm gonna go with the Nationals just squeaking by the Braves, followed by the Marlins, and the Phillies and Mets are out of it by August.
All right, Andy.
I agree with Keith there, and I'm going to go Nationals, Braves at the top, then Marlins, and then Mets and Phillies bringing up the basement.
All right, so Keith and Andy both think the standings are pretty much going to stay as they are
now. Status quo.
and the Cowboy comes in a little bit of a wild card. So, great segment, guys. Ben, great analysis. That was an awesome discussion. And we're gonna go to our last break. And when we come back, we're gonna talk a little World Cup with the man, the myth, Jeffrey Machado.
Did Giancarlo just hit another one?
He did. Knocking culo, popping mulos out the socket, trying to ride with the sumo. You know my rise is high, word I be trilling. The bitches be trying to ride, but the curb be killing them. Filling them with the gas, my G's premium on. Let it come, get it. First work the ton, then let the pun hit it. Split it in half, watch the gas. Baby, take a bath, be good. I might put away the wood and give you the mustache.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceTVNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at the History of WWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Welcome back, sports fans, to the Sports Lounge for our final segment. Hope you guys have enjoyed the show so far. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed doing it. This has been it's been fantastic. Our last segment, as we said, is going to be World Cup soccer with our resident soccer expert. Honestly, the only soccer expert I know, Jeff Machado. How you doing, Jeff?
Excellent, Roger, and it's okay because I'm also the only soccer expert that I know.
So perfect. But in all seriousness, Jeff is a huge soccer guy. Really, really knows his stuff. So, you know, being that, you know, soccer hasn't, you know, we keep waiting for it to catch on, and I hear that this is going to be the year. So I'm sure anyone tuned in to the Sports Lounge is going to be real interested in the home team, Team USA. Regardless of what their coach says, maybe we can win this thing. Why don't you give us a preview of what we can expect from Team USA in the World Cup, Jeff?
Well, Roger, see, every 4 years, the world gathers to complain about diving. And I think that is the main thing when it comes to the United States team, because we don't dive. If we started diving more, then we could probably win more games.
So, Jeff, when you say diving, I just so the audience understands, you're talking about the NBA equivalent of the flop, where the guy gets touched on the arm and goes down like he's been shot.
Yes, exactly. It's really hard when you first start off watching soccer, which is, by the way, the greatest sport in the world. Fact, not opinion. Because as soon as a guy gets touched by another guy, he will go to the ground in a dramatic display and act like he has just been shot in order to get a foul call from the referee. And this is a very un-American thing. So in order to get America to the point where we are succeeding on a world stage, we need to embrace the dive, the flop, quote-unquote. We need to be more like the San Antonio Spurs and less like the Detroit Pistons of the late 80s, if that makes any sense.
So Jeff Machado, key to the Americans winning is more flopping.
Yes.
More flopping. All right. So an example of that, I know, you know, again, as your host here, I don't want to pretend to be a soccer expert, but I get into the World Cup and I saw Brazil play yesterday, and I saw kind of the game deciding goal, the goal that I believe made it 2-1, was precipitated by probably the worst flop I've ever seen. You want to talk about that, Jeff?
Yeah. I mean, all right. So Brazil is the heavy favorite. They're hosting the World Cup. And they're having trouble against Croatia. And Croatia's a pretty good team. They got some pretty good players. It was going to be a tough first game anyway. But reason they won, they played terrible. I was out playing them for the whole game, and they get a decision by the referee because he's in the penalty box. He gets touched on the left with a hand, not even grabbed, just touched. And he literally just goes to the ground like a flash, boom, penalty kick. And this guy's name is Fred. Just Fred, and that makes me hate it even more. Because, I mean, Brazil has a history of cool, just like one-name stars like Pele and Garrincha and Neymar and all these guys. But Fred, I mean, I feel bad for all guys named Fred. Because all around the world, they've just taken this guy has just taken this name, Fred. Anyway, the point is, they got
not for nothing, Jeff, but that's, you know, if you're going to go Fred as your one name, it might as well just be Dick. That's what the cowboy thinks. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's like a cat named Paul. This doesn't make sense.
So I, another question for a novice soccer guy. So that happened, and that looked to me like the equivalent of home cooking. This thing's in Brazil, and they get this just gift-wrapped call from the refs. Was that the case, or is that going to result in a penalty kick more often than not, and is that why the guys flop, and is that why the Americans need to flop more?
All those things that you just said are true. And we're going to get to this at the end of the segment because it has to do a lot with my prediction for how this World Cup is going to turn out. I will just say a couple of things about Brazil hosting the World Cup. Brazil has not lost on Brazilian soil since 1975. Also, when you have a team that is favored, like Brazil was heavily favored against Croatia. So when you have the more skillful players in the penalty box, if you are willing, and most teams around the world are, which is what I'm trying to say, is embracing the diving, embracing the flopping, you are going to get those calls because they know how to sell it, and the team that is trying to defend you knows that they have to kind of do a few illegal things to stop you from scoring. You see what I'm saying? So the better team is going to get that call 100% of the time. And forget about the fact that it's Brazil in Brazil hosting the World Cup.
Got it. Got it. So that's a great segue there, Jeff, to, you know, what so the Americans, do you think the Americans make it out of their group?
Absolutely not.
All right. So it's going to be one and done, most likely. It's an accomplishment to have made it at all. Maybe 4 years from now, they'll flop more and be able to advance to the round of 16. Is that pretty much where we're coming from?
Look, I was raised a Bears fan, you know, like my old man was a big Larry Bird guy. I don't like flopping. I hate it. What I'm trying to say is that you have to embrace it because it's just the way it is. Now, the United States, they're coming a long way. I think they are a lot better now than they have been in the past decade. You know, we've never had a great American soccer team. We've never had a great American soccer star. And this World Cup is very exciting for the USA, because they just happen to get placed in the most difficult group. They got to play Ghana, Portugal, Germany, the alleged quote unquote group of death.
Yeah, but it's two of the top five teams, right?
Yeah. I mean, Portugal is, they probably, without a healthy Ronaldo, and Ronaldo isn't 100%, but Germany is one of the favorites, one of the top three favorites to win the whole World Cup. And Ghana is one of the best teams from Africa. They lost to Ghana last World Cup. I mean, but the fact that they're saying that this is the group of death says something about the USA's skill level. I mean, they are on the world stage as they're an up-and-coming team. And that all starts from their head coach, or their manager, who is Jürgen Klinsmann from Germany, won the World Cup with Germany. And he has basically provided most of the controversy surrounding this team because he cut Landon Donovan, like the face of American soccer for the past 10, 15 years. Yeah. He's bringing in European-born players because the big thing with these world competitions is dual citizenship. There are five German-born players on this team. He's bringing in players that were born in Germany from American fathers or German mothers or vice versa, and he wants a European-based team. And that's why I'm excited, because that is what's going to win. And people are criticizing Klinsmann because he's saying the United States doesn't have a chance to win this World Cup, but he's not saying that he's not going to try to win it. What he's saying is the way that we go about training our young players isn't conducive to actually winning.
But you
this
think
is like the long term strategy, not the let's get out of the group in this World Cup and then lose.
From this guy's perspective, who played on a World Cup winning team, who coached the 2006 Germany team to the semifinals, Brazil has probably 200 players that would beat out the top player on the United States team. It's just not a practical – like, we just don't have the
we don't have the guys to win this year, no matter what you do.
We have to get rid of the MLS. The MLS is a sucky system. We got to get rid of college soccer, send kids over to Europe to play in the best clubs in the world, and hopefully by, 2018, 2022, we can maybe try to get to the semifinals.
Awesome analysis, Jeff. Awesome, awesome analysis. So, what it sounds like to the novice here is that the United States, while probably not going to make any noise this year, are up and coming, have a great coach, and are finally starting to do things the right way. So I think that's great as a fan of the USA. Hopefully, as the years go by and the World Cups come, we start making some noise. So with that said, let's talk about the teams that we think are actually going to be the players this year. And I know you mentioned earlier that you had a prediction about who was going to win it. I think I could gather from the way you were talking who that is. But why don't you let the people know who you like and why?
All right. Well, let's say something crazy happens, okay? If you're an American, you want to root for the front runner, you don't like being the underdog, you think that the USA has a chance. Let's say USA goes out on Monday and beats Ghana, let's say 2-1, because I don't see how they can shut out Ghana. Ghana's too fast. They got a lot of great young players. And let's say Cristiano Ronaldo isn't healthy. And so Germany, USA advance out of Group G. So your first round game would be against Belgium. Now, Belgium is one of my dark horses for this tournament. Belgium is an amazing team. They have Eden Hazard from Chelsea. And look, I'm not going to give it all up yet, but basically this tournament is a joke. There's only one team that's going to win this tournament. But if you're looking for what teams are going to be playing in the quarterfinals and semifinals, Belgium is a very big dark horse. Here are the stories for this tournament, okay? Brazil is going to win. That's a fact. You heard it here first on the Sports Lounge on Place to Be Nation. Brazil will win this World Cup, 100% positive, guaranteeing it.
Guaranteeing. I like that, Jeff.
I concur.
Absolute guarantee.
All right.
But let's say that I could be wrong. The only way that Brazil loses would be to Argentina in the final because Lionel Messi scores like 5 goals.
It's in the realm of possibility, though?
It is in the realm of possibility. Maybe he scores 2 or 3. See, Lionel Messi could be the best player of all time. Mm. But when you're discussing the best player of all time, they have to have won the World Cup. You're talking Pele, Diego Maradona, Zinedine Zidane. All of the players in the conversation for best player ever have won the World Cup, and Messi has played terribly in the World Cup. He has 2 goals in 8 World Cup games.
Wow.
Because they basically triple team him. But this year, Argentina is probably the best that he has been on. Like, their squad is stacked this year, and I don't think you can shut. I mean, he's going to be up front with Kun Agüero, the star in the Premier League, Manchester City. 2 Premier League titles in the last 3 years. So it's possible, but I just think Brazil is too deep. They're too young. Neymar is just running everything from the sweeper position. And I'm looking at a Brazil, Germany, Argentina, Ivory Coast semifinal.
All right. So Brazil's going to take it, according to Mr. Machado here. But Jeff, a question for you. It's any single elimination tournament, and we see this every year in the NCAAs. So single elimination tournament, the cream does not necessarily rise to the top because anything can happen in any individual game, right? They're guys, the San Antonio Spurs can shoot 76% in the first half. So I know you mentioned Messi could beat Brazil by himself. That would be one possibility. What other possible, not saying these things are going to happen, but what other possible surprises do you see happening or possibly happening that we can look out for and say, you know, that happened. Jeff said that might happen.
Well, an African team has never won, and I'm a really big fan of the Ivory Coast this year. So let's say, I don't know, Brazil gets to the semifinals against Germany. And even though I think Germany, while one of the top three or four teams in the world, I think they're a little bit old. I think they're not going to be able to keep up with Brazil. But we already saw Brazil struggle against Croatia. So maybe Germany plays a perfect game, beats Brazil, goes on to the final. Messi breaks his leg in the first minute of the game against Ivory Coast, and they go on. So it's Ivory Coast, Germany. I don't know. Maybe you could put your money on the Ivory Coast to win the whole thing.
All right. So that's the extreme dark horse pick right there. Brazil's going to win it, but
dark horse. But Brazil is a lock.
But if Ivory Coast wins it, we can edit this recording so that you predicted that that victory, Jeff.
If Ivory Coast wins it, Wilfred Bonny will have scored the golden boot and possibly the golden ball, and he will have had at least 8 goals. Mark it down. It's not going to happen, though, I'm telling you. Brazil, 100%. Neymar is going to be the player of the tournament, most goals in the tournament. Messi is going to have to walk back to Argentina in shame with his head between his legs saying, why could I never play good in the World Cup? I just don't know.
Maybe they'll have the next one in Argentina for him. But, Jeff, that's great, great analysis there. I feel 100% more prepared for my World Cup watching now, and I'm sure the rest of our listeners do too. So that's all we got for you tonight on the Sports Lounge. This has been a fantastic, fantastic episode. I've really enjoyed it. Jeff, in particular, it's been really good having you on, and hopefully we can make you a staple on here. I think you add a lot, and I think your analysis was fantastic. Do you think we'll maybe get you on again?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, boys, and I'll see you next time.
Awesome. So for Andy, for Chad, for Keith, this is the Cowboy Sports Lounge out, and we're gonna let Jackie Moon, Love Me Sexy, take you out. So thanks everyone, tune in next week.
That's what's been happening. Yeah. Too late now. It's home.